The city gets a big shot of federal money to develop the downtown sports complex. Meanwhile, Mayor Curry says he wants to move the jail out of downtown. And congrats to Raines High School, now a two-time state champ. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. We have a lively group in studio today. Just wait. They are ready to go, and you can join us now at 549-2937. Then later, finding affordable and supportive housing for this area's homeless. We'll tell you about Ability Housing's The Solution That Saves. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy news week, we have the A-team in studio today as we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, he edits the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hey, Tim.
Good to be here.
Sherry McGill is here, co-founder of the new Jack's Lookout.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you, and our own regular contributor, John Burr.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to have you all here, and lots to discuss this week on the show. Everything from the mayor's big announcement that he wants to move the jail out of downtown. How's he going to afford that? How's that going to happen? We'll talk about it. Speaking of money, there's now an estimated price tag on selling JEA and more to discuss. But our top story this Friday, the city of Jacksonville, along with JTA, just in time for Christmas, are getting some $25 million from the feds to develop what's called an innovation corridor downtown. Now, this money will help with plans to take down those elevated ramps that come off the Hart Bridge along Bay Street. JTA, meanwhile, is going to use its funds to create what they call a 3-mile-long self-driving vehicle network, okay, so that you could take a car that you're not going to drive all the way into the sports entertainment complex, driverless cars. At the same time as all this is announced, we're also learning this week that Jacksonville is backing off its plans for a new downtown convention center. So lots to discuss here. What are your thoughts about all this? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Let's begin with Tim Gibbons, as we talk about the business implications for all of these announcements for the downtown sports corridor and everything Shad Khan and, of course, Mayor Curry are trying to accomplish here.
And it's funny how all of these do fit together, as you said in your introduction. I mean, these are all just different puzzle pieces on Bay Street. So kind of taking it from you know, the waterfront down Bay Street. The ramp thing's fascinating. Typically, the city has not gone in for, they haven't been successful in grants. They also haven't applied for like two grants out of the same pool of money as they have here. And to get them both is actually a very big deal. The ramp thing's interesting. It's widely believed that you can't redevelop the shipyards unless you take down those ramps. So whether or not you think the shipyards should be developed, this obviously is the first step that has to be taken. Having the federal money to do it is a big shot in the arm for getting the project done, even though the administration had said it would do it without federal money.
Sherry McGill, editor or co-founder, I should say, of the Jack's Lookout, former head of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund. You know more than most how hard it can be to get this kind of money. This is a big deal for Jacksonville. We haven't always been successful in getting the grants we've applied for big public projects. How do you assess this?
Well, I mean, I would say congratulations, as Tim said, to the administration. Obviously, it was a concerted effort. You know, I'll be a little bit of a critic here and say that I wish that we would use the same kind of concerted effort around other infrastructure issues.
Right.
For the people of Jacksonville. I was recently at a city council meeting where an elderly African-American woman from the north side said she doesn't have city water. So my question about all of this, despite congratulations to the city, is how do we set priorities when it comes to infrastructure issues?
Yeah, because we have great infrastructure needs. Dan Scanlon, John Burr.
Well, it's interesting. The Times Union did state this week that there was some concern that you have JTA and city both filing for grants and they might actually cancel each other out. So this is pretty big in this tight budget time to actually get the two of them. Now, Cutting out that ramp, yes, it's a bottleneck up there. Widening Bay Street, where Intuition Ale is, to obviously increase the traffic flow there. That's a nice idea. Putting in the autonomous transportation pods. They're not cars. They're like 10-person pods, and JTA has been testing different varieties in a little painted, right up the street from this studio. And they're intriguing. They seem to work. That would aid some traffic flow there. But again, you're only talking, what, 15 of these, and they hold 10 or 15 people each. So that's not a lot of people. That might work if you got a party to go to, you know, at Shad Khan's new place. But I don't think it's going to really improve traffic that much.
Just real quick, the idea for
it's
those.
It's visibility, though, obviously, to have all your traffic going down on the surface instead of flying overhead.
Over the ramps. And, and by the way, the city wants those ramps down. And despite the fact that it's interesting, not all of the citizens out there are in favor of taking those ramps down. John?
No, they're not. You know, part of this is if you take the ramps down, there's a whole a theory of redeveloping downtowns, which says, you know, stop the traffic flow that just zooms out of downtown at 5 o'clock. Slow it down. Build some build some storefronts. Get people to actually, you know, encourage people to actually spend some time downtown. And that, and I think this kind of plays into that. It also, you know, it also plays into, Tim mentioned the puzzle pieces fitting together. At the same week we get these grants, we also find out where the city is officially backing away from a convention center on building it on Bay Street. And that, of course, fits in very well with Shad Khan's plans to build his own convention center. Down on the Shipyards property. So, yeah, these things are fitting together rather nicely.
I think this is coming together to basically execute Shad Khan's vision for the sports complex.
I mean, that is at least theoretically part of it. And I think we have to be clear in some ways when we say the city's backing away from the convention center, the mayor's office is backing away from it. DIA obviously thought this was a good idea. We've talked to people in the convention center business who think it's a good idea. But there's a belief in the mayor's office that now's not the right time. And in part, they say, because of all the other things basically that they want to do. There's other priorities, which is, you know, political speak for no, we want to take that pot of money and spend it somewhere else, such as taking down the ramps, such as moving the jail, such as doing things that they prioritize more than having a convention center.
Yeah. And to pick up on John's point, Melissa, about what I would call the low-hanging fruit. So when he talks about slowing down traffic downtown, for years we've had an analysis that has said turn the one-way streets into two-way streets. We have a hard time
Why is that so hard to do?
Right. We have a hard time doing the obvious. People complain about parking downtown. I've worked down here almost 30 years. Plenty of parking. People don't know where it is.
I know.
Now, there's an interesting thing with that one-waying, two-waying sort of thing, that when you talk to people about downtown traffic, the things that slow traffic down, make it more manageable, help businesses, because the idea is that if you have people slowly driving down a street, they'll see a storefront, they'll stop and pick something up on the way home from work, that sort of thing. But commuters don't actually want that. People who want a vibrant downtown might, but if you work downtown and live in Nocatee, you want to, you know, leave the TIA bank building, get in your car, and drive the heck out of town.
But couldn't changing the built environment a little bit be on the table? As Sherry said, the one-way streets are awful.
Right, they move traffic efficiently.
Yeah, they're designed to evacuate the downtown core, not keep people in it.
And get people in quickly also. It's an in-and-out design that, you know, if that's what you want to do, it works pretty well. But, you know, there's a whole school of thought about redeveloping downtowns these days, which has been done in other cities, which, you know, says the two-way streets, get rid of the expressways that come right into downtown, you know, slow the traffic down, get people walking, stop people in their cars all the time.
And John, developing housing, I mean, we always go to the high-end, flashy, very, very expensive projects, as opposed to saving some of these historic properties. We tear them down, they sit there as vacant properties for decades. thinking someone's going to come along and say, wow, isn't this a gold mine, and I'm going to redevelop it for a high-end project. Well, you know, I don't understand how we set priorities.
There's one more domino here quickly. If ShotKan and others develop a convention center around the sports complex, then maybe the Prime Osborne can be converted back into a rail hub, which I really think it should be done. I was at an event just recently, and there wasn't a lot of people there and a lot of display space. Let's make it a transportation hub with the beautiful JTA facility and the bus hub right across the street. Boy, wouldn't that work well on that end of downtown.
Yeah. Okay. Question on priorities. When Sherry talks about, you know, destroying historic neighborhoods, the Villa got razed, which is actually a tragedy for Jacksonville and its cultural fabric. But it is coming back to life now, in part because of JTA, but in part because of the Vestcor housing that's being built there that will bring an influx of residents to
the
downtown.
New affordable housing opened just this week in that part of downtown. And let's go to your calls here on the Friday Roundtable. 549-2937. Julie is in Atlantic Beach right now. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was, not so long ago, I thought I heard on your show that someone had rejected taking down those ramps, some government entity, I don't remember. And now we, being Jacksonville, got a grant to take them down. So I don't know. Who was that said not to take them, that they wouldn't approve?
I think that there was a holdup at the state level for the state portion of the funding, if I'm not mistaken, Julie.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
All right. So they just skipped right over the state. All right.
And there have been
critics.
Thanks,
Julie.
There have been critics of taking down the ramp. I mean, there are a lot of people who have been zooming in and out of downtown for their whole work life, and they like it.
Well, yeah. There's also the idea of, and I find this funny, of we almost sidestep the question of, is it good to take the ramps down or not? Is ShotKan's plan good or not? And immediately jump to the political reality that, yes, the mayor's administration is doing this to help benefit the billionaire Jaguars owner. You can admit that and still argue about whether it's a good idea or not.
Well, knowing what we know about the merits of this plan, let me ask you guys, let's assume ShotKan executes his vision to a T, the ramps come down, there's a lot more development around the football stadium, hotels, bars, more live music, a marina, a convention center. It becomes a big hub of its own in downtown. Do you like that?
That's the idea that people have long been hoping for. I mean, so all of these projects, you know, you go back a month ago when the convention center idea was still in the works, and you basically had Lot J, the shipyards, the entertainment thing that's being developed or being planned at the old Berkman 2 site, the convention center, and then a redeveloped landing. So you'd have a 1.3-mile stretch. You combine that with JTA's and the North Florida TPO's innovation corridor, and you would seriously have a thing that people would come to Jacksonville to see. Now, is that what we should be spending our money on? It's not for me to judge, and I think there is that question of, we have areas that don't have sidewalks in the city, and we're talking about doing...
And we're getting calls. Let me get a few more calls on about that. Stanley in Nassau County. Hi, Stanley. Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Stanley downtown.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes. My concern here, we keep talking about downtown, but for 50 years, we made a agreement with the African-American community on the north side, and we have not attempted to address that issue at all. But we continue to do stuff downtown here, and we to redevelop downtown. And we talk about one city, one Jacksonville, but what happened to that idea?
Yeah, okay.
That we voted for.
Thanks, Stanley. And that gets back to Sherry's point, which is there are huge tracts of this county, this city county government, that are crying out for infrastructure improvements and other improvements and have never gotten the money they were promised, as he said, some 50 years ago when the city and the county consolidated.
I think Tim and Stanley touch on something that we never really kind of talk about here, which is Tim said the new entertainment zone would attract people to come here. We always talk about Jacksonville as a tourist destination. How do we get more people to move here? How do we get more people to visit here, spend their money here? I never hear the planners, the administration, city council talk about the folks who live here. And where do we fit in this list of priorities? So I keep coming back to that question. Mm-hmm. I think Stanley's right.
And, well, you know, you talk about infrastructure. We just right now we're looking at the repairs of a broken water main and the road above it that's closing off part of Fort Caroline Road. We've had so many water main breaks in the past few weeks. I have to wonder what's happening underneath the roads that right now are so pockmarked and potholed in many parts of the city. So that's a raw infrastructure need. Major cities like New York and Boston are finding out what happens when your 100-year-old pipes start going. Ours are much newer, but they're going as well.
Well, you know, the infrastructure in parts of town where affluent people live is pretty good. We're really talking about the infrastructure in the poorer sections of town. And the caller's right. These promises were made 50 years ago. These promises were ignored. You know, so it is something that the city has to deal with. I think what they would say, the current administration, is, you know, if we get these economic development projects going and really, you know, create a vibrant, economically viable downtown, that the good of impacts will spread throughout the city. Now,
you mean they will trickle down?
You can buy that.
Like a water main break.
You can buy that or you cannot buy that. But I would think that would probably be the argument you would hear from the administration.
Okay, and here's an email from Mark. You're talking about 15 different 10-passenger self-driving pods? That sounds like the Skyway on the ground.
It is. I tried to break into that earlier. So that is the JTA plan, is that basically the Skyway is a train to nowhere.
Right.
And if you take the existing Skyway, put these autonomous pods on them, but have ramps that come down from the Skyway to the surface streets.
Then that's solves that last mile problem.
Right, because the Skyway doesn't go anywhere, but if you could... And no one's building more Skyway tracks.
So we're talking about building new ramps?
Look, we had a development plan.
We're going to take some down and put some up?
Could we repurpose them? See, that's my idea.
We had a major development.
That we empty the jail and we put the convention center there. It's the same sort of reuse sort of thing.
That, yes.
You know, we take the heart ramps down and we make those Skyway ramps.
But guys, we had a major development planned in the 1980s along what is now called the shipyards. And one of the reasons why that developer said no ultimately is because the Skyway Express did not go down Bay Street and connect to the football stadium, which seemed like a very logical thing to us back then.
Sure.
So this would obviously fix that again. Going back to their earlier question, would you like the idea of all this? Yes, I would. But you know something? I'm a downtown employee, and I take the Main Street Bridge home, and I'd maybe go visit on the weekend. So I would not be one of those to visit during the week where there's going to be a traffic jam around the stadium.
Ron on the south side. Hello, Ron. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. You know, from time to time, I listen to these discussions. What I come away with is the city fathers don't have any vision for the city, really. I have been in Jacksonville for 8 years. I came here from St. Petersburg in the West Coast. And over there, they know exactly what to do. And there is nothing that draws me to downtown. And it won't be the entertainment. It won't be the convention center. You need people living downtown. And the only thing that Curry has done that I now agree with is get that jail out of downtown. It's an eyesore. It's disgusting.
Okay, thanks, Ron. And that tees up our next headline of the week just perfectly. So thank you for that, Ron. Because, as Ron pointed out, even though it's definitely not likely to happen anytime soon, Mayor Curry says he wants to relocate the Duval County Jail and move it out of downtown. Now, the mayor's most recent capital improvement proposal estimates that they could build a $246 million, 3,000-bed pre-trial detention center on the north side. They also are listing a new police memorial building for $97 million. And they would keep about 500 beds downtown, according to this proposal. So here's our question to callers. Do you agree with this idea that's being floated to move the jail out of downtown Jacksonville? This story broken in the Jacksonville Business Journal. Tim Gibbons, this is something the mayor's staff is saying they want to do in his second term, should he be reelected. Is that even realistic given the budgetary lift this would require?
That's the big question. And when the administration talks about having different priorities, clearly if they see moving the jail would be more beneficial for downtown than adding a convention center, you know, that's probably the sort of thinking they're having. So this came up in a downtown development forum that we had on Tuesday, where, you know, we were talking to the panel and the mayor's chief of staff, who's also interim head of the DIA, was there. And the question was about the problems that they want to solve, talking to a range of people. And I specifically asked him about the jail, where he said that he would be surprised if a plan was not in place or beginning to be executed by the end of Curry's second term. That's a big lift. We're talking, you know, all told, moving the police memorial building and the jail and building a 500-bed kind of smaller center downtown. You know, you're talking millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, hundreds of millions.
You know, that has people on Twitter saying, well, maybe that's why the administration wants to sell JEA. but you know, it is the question. A convention center, you could at least say, would bring revenue in. So that would also have a hefty price tag, but you'd have people here spending money. Prisoners are not as revenue generating.
I don't think anyone would disagree that it's a good idea to move the jail if it could be moved.
It ain't going anywhere.
But, you know, let me just say to all of you, you all were around when they built the thing. And it was criticized at the time. Wasn't it?
No, it was not.
It was not?
There was no discussion about, oh my God, why are we building a jail there? It was only criticized because they said it was too big.
But, too big.
But the old jail.
The location was never an issue.
The old jail is where Berkman is right now. So it was a logical idea to move the jail to the other side of Police Memorial off Prime Riverfront land. And that old jail was a horrible place. It was your visions of nightmares, because I remember it well.
Dickensian, kind of?
Very, very scary. And then the John E. Goode Correctional Center was moved. And as John Burr mentioned earlier, they had so much room in the darn place that they were housing federal inmates in there for a while. Now it's overcrowded. The first thing that should go should be the 1970s era white elephant of a sheriff's office. It is a labyrinth. It is overcrowded. It is a poorly designed building for modern policing.
We're going back to Ron's question about long-term vision. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the jail's 27 years old. How did we make that mistake?
And that's not a mistake. That's a young building in municipal areas.
When I first moved here, I was just amazed that all of these ugly government buildings were on the river. I just couldn't believe it. And every time I meet someone who's new to this area, they say the same thing to me. Like, why did they put those buildings on the river? What were they thinking? The school board building, the old city hall annex, courthouse, all the jail, on the downtown riverfront.
Well, because the public owned the land, and so what happens over time is the people's vision of the river changes.
Right.
Sure.
And no one seemed to have the vision back then that, we should be developing this waterfront
in a different way. Was to put your government in a prime, beautiful spot, and it's on the logo of almost every city department, which has the city hall and it has the jail and the sheriff's office. Look at the badges. Look at the patches on the cops. It's got their headquarters and jail right there. I mean, back in the 70s, this was the vision. Put it there in the center. Make that a strong downtown.
But the whole area is a floodplain. This is the part that it just challenges me and on some days infuriates me, but we never talk about the floodplain. Go to Chicago and look what they've done with Millennium Park. It's fabulous. It's public space, but it's on the edge of Lake Michigan. If it floods, you know, we're not flooding public or private buildings.
Right.
That's a related issue, is that the city has not aggressively moved to plan for another Hurricane Irma, I don't believe, in the way that we need to, because it's a virtual certainty that we're going to see more storm surge downtown at some point.
To bring this back to the jail, with all these priorities we're talking about for infrastructure that we've been talking about the whole show, spending $400 million to move the jail is not very high on the list. It's just not. It's really an aesthetic when we've got really life and death infrastructure things here that need to be done.
Is it a good re-election pitch?
Actually, I'm not even.
You don't think that's the thinking?
I don't know. And as I said, being at the at the event where this came up, I'd probably be more cynical if it was something that they had brought up as opposed to just, you know, Hughes saying in reaction to a question.
It just came up in conversation.
Which makes me slightly less cynical. And I know you don't appreciate cynicism on the show. but it is an interesting thing. I don't know who gets excited other than your strong downtown supporters. I don't know if moving the jail really excites anybody.
Right.
And I would think that your strong downtown supporters also like a convention center idea.
Okay, and lots of tweets about this. Michelle tweets the show, downtown Jacksonville doesn't need a convention center. There is nothing downtown to do after the convention is over.
That's the argument.
I know out-of-town meeting planners who refuse to come to Jacksonville because they say there's nothing to do here. Nan tweets the show, the sports complex is on the outskirts of downtown. What we need is funding to improve the heart of downtown. This is great for Mr. Khan, but not for downtown business. What about the Jacksonville Landing? Okay, and let's go to...
I got landing stuff, too.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh, no.
Dominic is in Orange Park. Hi, Dominic. Good morning.
Good morning, Minister. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, you know, 2 months ago, I was in San Antonio, Texas. And I really enjoyed the Riverwalk. It's such an amazing place. They have shopping centers along the Riverwalk. People play on the water. And I thought about Jacksonville. We in Jacksonville have much better water, which is the Jacksonville Landing, the St. John River. And I don't know whether there's any plans in the Jacksonville development agenda for using up water in a way that will actually benefit Jacksonville.
Thanks for that call, Dominic.
Well, you know, the Riverwalk was built years ago with plans to make it the place to be, the South Bank Riverwalk. And for years, there are festivals and events on it. And when's the last time anybody's gone to an event on the South Bank Riverwalk or any portion of the North Bank Riverwalk? It has become a past idea.
Here's a tweet from Tara. She used to work in the jail. She writes, a 27-year-old building used 24/7 by unhappy clientele is going to require millions in renovation soon. And keep in mind, the generator for the jail is in the basement.
Yep. I think I know that Tara, too, and she does know what she's talking about.
Yes.
But the generator in the basement goes back to the point about what are we doing long term. It is a floodplain.
Here is an email from Earl Johnson, Jr. His father, Earl Johnson, Sr., of course, was a leading political figure in Jacksonville and was involved in the consolidation effort. Earl emails the show, my dad went on the record a number of times as an at-large councilman in the 1980s that he opposed the new jail. So I guess there was pushback to putting the jail where it is.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, just a slight defense of the people in the past when we talk about having a vision. The idea that your government buildings will be in the heart of downtown isn't, you know, insane. The idea that you... If you're trying to get people downtown and you know, during the era of white flight, during the era of suburbanization, where everybody was fleeing downtown, you had vacant land, you wanted to get people here. So you put your municipal offices downtown to basically, you know, you can make those employees come here. So
And Shannon emails the show, if the jail moves, does that mean the side businesses like the bail bonds businesses would go to a new location? Because they're so lovely and enticing, of course, as I drive by them every day. She goes on to say, I'm trying to see a bright side to us spending $250 million on a jail because we have so much crime in Duval. And that's from Shannon. Rusty is in Arlington. Hi, Rusty. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I lived in Orlando for 30 years, and I was an operations manager for Mears Transportation there. And they handle, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say they handle 90% of the traffic for conventions, Disney parks, etc. And this town needs a convention center like it needs a hole in the head. I agree with people that say there is nothing to do here. In Orlando, you take someone like Microsoft or some of these other large companies that would come in, they would buy out the whole park at Universal Studios for the evening and have a company party. They would do the same on Disney properties, backstage Disney tours, things of that nature that we pale in comparison. We have nothing to offer.
Well, I appreciate the call, Rusty.
They could tour the jail.
And, you know... I don't want to give downtown such a terrible rap. Downtown's a lot better than it used to be.
I think downtown's
it's a
great.
Lot better than it used to be.
But the car has a very valid point. That was the study that is generally being relied on. That is a couple years out of date now, but that basically talked to convention center planners. And I think it was 60% of them said they would never come here because there's nothing to do. And the argument of having a convention center as part of the shipyards is
there'd
the shipyards
be things
would
to
be
do.
The stuff to do.
Yeah.
However, the idea of the Berkman 2 entertainment thing and a revitalized landing with a convention center in between them.
And you mentioned you had news about the landing?
Well, yeah, I mean, not news so much as the interesting changes that are happening there. Slamon Enterprises hired a new COO who basically his past job was helping revitalize a festival marketplace in New York City. And it's an interesting strategic move to see how Slamon Enterprises, the owner of the landing, and the city, the owner of the land upon which the landing sits. Obviously, they've been fighting. And Slamon is going in is making a move in that fight. So it's possible that stalemate, which honestly has been going on through several administrations,
sure,
it'll be interesting to see if that actually breaks.
One more, we'll follow that. One more call about downtown news, then we're going to move on a bit. Dixie is in Orange Park. Hey, Dixie, good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering about the many, many homeless shelters in the downtown area and how something like that impacts the attractiveness of the urban core as a place to go.
Okay, Sherry McGill.
Yeah, well, every vibrant American city I've ever visited has its share of downtown homeless. So it's just part of the equation. I think people who live in the suburbs ought to spend more time downtown.
Right.
It is not a crime-ridden, dangerous place.
That's right.
And one last comment about the convention center. I think Rusty suggests that we need to be thinking regionally. On the one hand, there's nothing to do downtown. On the other hand, we compete with Amelia Island and with Ponte Vedra Beach. Mm-hmm. And conventions that
and
I've
St.
been
Augustine.
A part of nationally don't come to downtown because they see this as a resort area. So they go to one of those other two venues because you can go to the beach and you can play golf.
Right. Yeah.
So,
very
I mean, we're
point.
Competing against ourselves, and we right. don't seem to raise that.
And there are grand hotels in those areas. There are grand events planned annually that
great
bring thousands of people
yeah.
in, such as the Amelia Island Concourse, such as all the events in St. Augustine. So those become draws right there.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with the incredibly subdued foursome we have today. John Burr, Tim Gibbons, Sherry McGill, and Dan Scanlon. And your calls at 549-2937. Now, a moment ago, someone said, well, maybe the administration is thinking it can afford to move the jail if it sells JEA, the city's publicly owned utility. This week, a new study did provide another look at what we could get for that, the value of Jacksonville's biggest asset, JEA. The study from the University of Florida shows that JEA is worth about $7.5 billion. And so, Sherry McGill, you were still the president of the DuPont Fund and were involved when that study was commissioned. Your thoughts?
Right. We commissioned that in February, and I'll tell you, I was intimately involved in it. People need to remember what was happening in February. The public financial management report had been released. It said the utility was valued at $7.5 to $11 billion, and it talked about how you could sell it. So what we did, you might remember Anna Brochet was president of city council at the time. She appointed a special subcommittee with John Crescenbeny as chair. I met with Mr. Crescenbeny. We talked about what a study might look like, et cetera, et cetera. This study was really designed not to tell the people of Jacksonville what to do with this utility, but what is its real value? What are the assets worth? Not what would someone pay for it, but what it's worth. And I think it's really important for people. I've read all the press reports about it. And people keep using the $7.5 billion figure. That's all the consolidated enterprises. The electric part is valued at $4.5 billion. You're not going to sell the water part. The report suggests that it's really difficult to sell water. 95% of Floridians are served by municipally owned water facilities. That should tell us something. So I kind of like the figure $4.5 billion. Okay. And what this report does not do, it doesn't say what you would do with $4.5 billion if you sold it.
It doesn't pass judgment on, whether it's a good idea
would
or not.
Would you retire some of your debt? Would you create a foundation? Because it is a publicly owned facility. And when publicly owned enterprises are sold, like hospitals that are owned by the public, those assets are converted into an endowment that typically serve a health purpose. So this notion that we would sell it and we would use it for all these exotic projects, I think, is questionable. The report does not talk about that. It just talks about the value.
But really, we're talking about a figure, as Sherry pointed out, of more like $4 billion, $4.5 billion. And here is a tweet from Stephen. The voters have spoken, he said. The straw poll passed. Mm-hmm. Keep these dream projects on hold. Take care of Jacksonville and residents first. He's talking about the straw ballot passed in November by Duval County voters saying, if more than 10% of JEA is put up for sale, the voters want to have a say in that.
Although what's interesting is that that's been generally viewed as a voter saying that they don't want JEA sold, which is one plausible reading of that. But another plausible reading is they just want to weigh in. Sure, typically if you're going out to have a referendum, you know, we're saying that we don't trust our elected officials to do the right thing. But, you know, I'm sure some...
Some
people don't.
I guess not.
But remember, there was a real backlash because this started being discussed before city council, I think, in January, February. By April, the administration was saying, we have no intent of selling this facility.
The administration had no intent, despite people associated with the administration, you know, floating the idea.
Well, you know, 73% in that straw poll voted in favor of you know, getting them involved, the public involved. I wonder if that vote segment would have changed if this valuation had been available a month ago prior to that straw poll.
John.
And more important than the straw poll is the city council has now passed the resolution, or it's now law that, you know, the thing can't, JEA cannot be sold without people voting on it. So, you know, Sherry's right. Back in February, things were moving very quickly and people were very nervous about JEA being sold. But I think the politics have completely shifted on this. Nobody's going to sell JEA. That's really off the table.
You think it's a non-starter now? You don't think this will revive it in a new mayoral term?
I don't think the study was meant to revive it.
But you don't think the mayor will bring this back, or someone will bring this back pending a re-election by Lenny Curry? You don't think this is coming back?
I don't. I think it's a political non-starter at this point. And I think not only have the people spoken, the city council has put up the roadblocks, and that's it. It's over.
I'm going to bet that it comes back.
If we need money, it may come back. It's nice to know how much it could underline bring.
See, now this is the value of this study. It isn't as a pro or con thing, but it's the, if it does come back, having hard figures like this, having, you know, a good thing to make a decision on is actually vital. I think that was one of the reasons, perhaps not the main one, but one of the reasons that some people were opposed to it, to the JEA sale idea when it first came up, is there seemed to be so much hand waving and so much, you know, smoke and mirrors, and, you know, how is Plant Vogtle going to fit in, and how is this going to work? And no one knew what they were dealing with. So at least here you can make a decision.
Well, and here's a tweet. That's why we commissioned the study.
Yeah. Here's a tweet. Isn't the JEA referendum non-binding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Only a straw ballot.
Bradley and Jacksonville.
But the city council
is
not.
The city council's action was not. Yeah, it is binding. Bradley in Jacksonville. Oh. Hi, Bradley. Good morning.
Good morning. How do you do?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
So I'm just curious. So just like some people are just noticing, wow, the world's sort of heating up a bit and the sea levels are rising. What about our river and the river rising? And how are we going to combat that when an ultimate amount of gentrification comes from these sea levels rising? And how is downtown Jacksonville going to battle that? Just curious.
No, absolutely. And we've devoted a lot of, thank you, Bradley. We've devoted a lot of time to that on this program, and we'll continue to, particularly since as Jacksport moves ahead with dredging the St. John's River and deepening it, more water from the Atlantic Ocean is going to be slushing into downtown. And in the event of severe weather, especially, we could be looking at incredibly catastrophic storm surges. That is the subject of a Riverkeeper lawsuit to try to stop this dredging from going forward, citing that very concern. Well, and so the city's response is, we've got to have the additional jobs from the port.
The city response to climate change is to ignore it. The city has done nothing in regard to climate change, and it refuses to discuss the issue.
This is true.
It's all part of a bigger Republican ideological strategy to just, you know, pretend it's not happening.
Well, and I think the jail being only 27 years old, John, is a perfect metaphor. We must think only 25 years out or 30 years out. But when you spend this amount of public money to build buildings that are supposed to last much longer than 30 years, and you put them in very sensitive places, you have to step back from this and look at this entire puzzle and say, what is the wise, smart place to put our money?
I think that's right. And it is remarkable to see the way other Florida cities are aggressively moving forward with climate mitigation and adaptation plans, long-term plans. They're taking all these matters and these decisions into account through the lens of adaptation and mitigation. We are not seeing that in Jacksonville, the only large Florida city, a vulnerable coastal city, that is not seeing that.
I mean, take a look what happened
down the road. You know, St. Augustine is doing massive stuff. You look further south, obviously they're doing stuff. Even in Republican held areas that, you know, there's some of these coastal towns governed by Republicans who might never say the word climate change, but are looking at, you know, the ground being eaten away from underneath them, and they're doing something about it. And I think John has a good point.
When the water comes in and the ground erodes away, that's a bipartisan problem. Everybody's affected by that.
Potholes don't have party
affiliation.
And Melissa, going back to the people's money, you mentioned dredging. We know if you look at the budget for the deep water dredging in 2 or 3 years, the people of Jacksonville are going to be asked to put up a piece of that budget. It's not a small figure. The figure I saw was $50 million. So, I mean, it's like $50 million here, $100 million there. Everett Dirksen said after a while, you're talking about real money.
And if you talk about economic impact, as Wells Fargo and all the attorneys in that tower, what happened when they were shut down for a few months because their computers and their electric systems flooded because of Irma?
Well, and they're in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, people shouldn't put stuff in basements.
I understand.
That's the key to the show today.
An old building that was once the shining star of downtown Jacksonville.
Well, the Times Union took its presses out of the basement, so they're very foresighted there. Look, you know, this is probably the issue, and we talk about infrastructure a lot. This is probably the infrastructure issue for Northeast Florida and for the whole east and west coast of this country. Is this sea level rise. And unfortunately, in this part of the country, people are just not having the discussion, and they're not allocating the money, and they're just ignoring it. It's really a shame.
We'll continue to highlight that on this program because we believe it's such an important issue. Okay, let me make a couple of other news and notes. On Tuesday, a fire displaced about 50 homeless people who were staying at the Beaches Rescue Recovery Mission in Jacksonville Beach. And so they've launched a fundraising campaign to help get these folks under a roof and to repair the damage. Please try to help the Beaches Rescue Recovery Mission. Go to adventuresingodscreation.org to donate. Do it at the holiday season. Help them out. And congrats to the state champs at Raines High School, the first ever back-to-back champs by a Duval County Public School.
Yeah.
All right, Raines. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida, the Grinch edition.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
Yes, only in Florida are too many people apparently named Scrooge, Grinch, or even Old Man Potter. Not to mention Hans Gruber from Die Hard. Yeah, in a survey that ranked Christmas spirit by state, Florida came in at number 48. Bah humbug! That's nothing to write the North Pole about. The survey measured online activity of the number of Google searches for things like Christmas movies, cards, ornaments, carols, charitable giving, plus the number of Christmas tree farms per capita. Florida has 17 Christmas tree farms, but apparently not enough Christmas cheer.
You don't Google for that. The true meaning of Christmas is in your heart.
You know, it isn't Christmas until you see Hans Gruber falling off the tower. Yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, we won't finish that quote.
I know that, Melissa.
Thank you, Dan Scanlon, Sherry McGill, Tim Gibbons, and John Burr. What a great panel. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you. Crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Give given the choice between the two of you, I'd take the seasick crocodile.
Nemours is not simply a place for care. Nemours is a way of caring for children. Our promise means we'll do whatever is in our power to help children grow up healthy, regardless of ability to pay. You can help. Nemours.org/ourpromise.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Holiday shopping at thrift stores and yard sales can save money, but some secondhand items for kids may have been recalled for defects. Our website has links to help avoid dangerous toys.
More at TaraHogan.com.
Wildfires displaced a whole lot of people this year, and even if some of the homes are still standing,
can't go back to mine. I can't use my things. I can't sleep in my bed. I can't go there.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, following the money to the charities helping the survivors. Next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Ira Flatto. This week on Science Friday, we're reviewing your picks for the best science books of the year.
This is Biff Robillard from Minneapolis, Minnesota. My favorite science book for 2018 is David Quammen's The Tangled Tree. I couldn't put the book down.
Tell us which science books you couldn't put down. I'll tell you mine on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Around the world, the Yellow Jackets see red. Senators here say they've seen enough.
MBS is a wrecking ball. I cannot see him being a reliable partner to the United States.
Police prepare to bring charges against Israel's prime minister, and Cubans get more connected. The Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, a new study shows that affordable housing benefits not only those struggling with homelessness or housing insecurity, but it helps the entire community. The solution that saves is a new state pilot around permanent supportive housing. And Shannon Nasworth, the CEO of Ability Housing, is here to tell us more about why this would benefit Jacksonville so much. And Shannon, always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Okay, so let's talk about this study, the solution that saves. It seems obvious to me, you know, the best way to help homeless people is to house them. Tell me about the solution that saves.
Well, you're 100% right. The solution to homelessness is housing. By definition, people are homeless because they are less a home. So if we get them a home, they're not homeless. But also, there have been a lot of studies around the country showing the cost effectiveness of this solution, but there wasn't any Florida-specific data. So we worked with the state of Florida and Florida Housing Finance Corporation, and Duval was the lead pilot site. There's two other sites that will be coming along. And what we found is Florida is the same as everywhere else. If we house people, it costs us less money. It costs us 30% less. What we did is we found 92 of the most frequent utilizers of our crisis services in the community. Hospitals and everybody else helped us identify them, provide them with a place to live, give them wraparound supports. They pay rent based upon their ability to pay. And we had a third party do an analysis. How much was it costing the community to maintain them as homeless for the 2 years before they moved in compared to the 2 years after? It's 30% less to house them than it is to maintain their homelessness.
It costs less in the long run to just get people into a decent place to live than to have people out on the streets. And so the challenge then becomes convincing policymakers that this is the way to go.
It is. And one of the challenges is when we provide them with the housing and the supports, the savings are in other systems. So how do we use our limited resources and recognize if we spend money in pot A, pot B, and pot C, and pot D, we'll see reductions. So that investment, while it's going up, is actually reducing others and looking at the aggregate budget as opposed to each individual silo.
What would be an example of that in Jacksonville? Like, let's say, like if I drive down the street to, let's say, the little pocket park behind the Jacksonville Public Library, lots of homeless people hang out in that park. Give me an example of, say, there's a gentleman I walk up to who's been chronically homeless and he is without a roof over his head, what are other services that he is using that cost more than it would cost for him to be part of this expanded pilot?
Basically, most likely, he has a lot of health conditions. And if you're homeless, you can't take care of your health. You're not getting preventative care. If you have hypertension, cancer, heart disease, any of these things, you're not getting care. So you have a crisis, you go to the hospital, you go to the emergency room, you get admitted, they do the best they can for you, then they release you and you go back to the streets and you just continuously do this cycle. If we can get him into a place to live, we can help him get primary care, get preventative care, and the hospitals and all of the healthcare system collectively saw a 58% reduction in their costs for the same individuals before they were housed compared to after they were housed.
Because emergency room care is the least efficient and the most expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's the biggest piece of it, isn't it? Healthcare. But there are other things too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Healthcare, without a doubt, is the biggest cost savings. And by the way, it's also the best result. The people's health becomes much better as well. So even if it was a flat cost, it's a better outcome. But the criminal justice system, everybody else also sees reductions.
Right. Your study found, according to the JSO, those who moved into permanent supportive housing interacted with the criminal justice system much less frequently. Fewer arrests, fewer tours through the jail, which also cost the taxpayers more money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They saw a 65% reduction in the number of arrests.
Okay. So then what's the plan to expand the solution that saves beyond the pilot?
What we're trying to do is first raise awareness because it's going to take resources. We have to dedicate resources to creating more of this housing. But if we do that, then we can help all those people on our streets, help them not cycle through the hospitals and the emergency crisis services and stabilize their lives. And oh, by the way, they also are able to get jobs and get their kids back into school and all other social benefits that come from this.
We have an affordable housing crisis in this city and in this country. We just need more affordable housing, not just for chronically homeless people, but for people that are just struggling in other ways.
Absolutely. And we need all of those workers in our community, but they're not making enough to afford a place to live. If you're a single mom and you're trying to rent a two-bedroom apartment and you make minimum wage, you have to work more than two full-time jobs to afford a two-bedroom apartment in Jacksonville.
Right. And so there's more on our website about the solution that saves. And Shannon Nasworth is the CEO of Ability Housing. Always great to see you doing such important work in this community. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Michelle Corum is our director. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. If you missed anything from this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.